Hello, and welcome to The Sound Off, a podcast where school safety takes center stage. My name is Michelle Gay, and I'm co-founder and executive director of Safe and Sound Schools. We're committed to protecting every school and every student every day. Today, we're talking about the critical aspects of school violence prevention and creating a safe learning environment for students. Before we dive into our discussion, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors for their support. This season of The Sound Off is brought to you by the Door Security and Safety Foundation, which advances the critical role of certified professionals in creating safe and secure building openings. For more information and to locate an expert, visit www.doorsecuritysafety.org. Joining me is Paul Tim, a physical safety expert with a deep understanding of the physical and cultural aspects of school safety. Listen in as we explore the nuances of school security, including misconceptions about school safety measures, the importance of a positive school culture, and how engaging students can play a pivotal role in ensuring a safe and secure learning environment. Welcome, Paul Tim, to The Sound Off. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm glad to be part of your podcast.
So we start every one of these Sound Off podcasts with a little icebreaker where we invite you, we talk about some super serious stuff here on the Sound Off, and you and I out there in the field doing some of the work that we're doing, the conversations that we are a part of can be heavy. So I think it's fun and always a little bit surprising for people to know something about you, Paul Tim, that they wouldn't necessarily expect. So we ask, what is your superpower, Paul Tim?
Yeah, and I'm going to answer this a little bit differently, I think, but I want to first tell you what my mom's superpower is, because it's so interesting. My mom, like you, is a former school teacher, and 5'3" and blonde haired and petite and kind. But when my mom walks into a room, she commands respect, and never had any discipline issues with students. And it wasn't because she was heavy-handed. It wasn't because she was domineering. She just walked in and people did what she asked them to do. I had never seen anything like it. And as a kid, she often subbed for my school. And you know what we did to substitutes in the day. You knew you could get away with things. But no, it never happened with my mom. And I have just a sort of reduced version of that. I find that I can walk into a room and get attention from people, even when I'm not feeling like I have to ask for it, I can get it. So that's not a great answer, because that's more my mom's superpower, but I did want to start with that. And I would say maybe my superpower is I have a capacity to build and maintain legitimate friendships across time and distance. And so if you said, well, who are some of your best friends? I would start naming people from the earliest days of elementary school, the neighborhood. I mean, these are friends who I talk with on a regular basis today, including my senior honors English teacher, who I spoke with today, Paul Baltz. And the thing that's interesting about that is it's now spanned multi-generations. As you know, I have numerous kids, but of my four kids, every one of them has their own independent friendships with some of my friends. So I'll call my friend Joe and I'll say, hey, I was just talking to Josh. And he said, I know, I just talked to him yesterday. And I'd be like, you just talked to my son Joshua yesterday? He said, well, are you surprised by that? And that's tremendously rewarding to me, to see those friendships carried across generations.
That is truly remarkable. That says so much about you. Having known you now for almost a decade, you really are kind of the glue in a lot of our little circles that have worked together in the field for, various projects. And you are always the one who's kind of bringing us back. So I appreciate
Thank
that.
You. That's it's very nice. And again, I greatly value our friendship. It's very meaningful to me.
Likewise. Well, thanks. And I totally relate to your mom. Totally relate to her. It is a thing. You just kind of have to put it on when you walk into the room. And I don't, I have tried to explain it to my husband It is literally, I sort of envision I'm putting on my sort of like teacher persona, and then I walk in and I don't know, it's a state of mind, but it's how you carry yourself. And even being a small person, you can carry some weight there. Well, let's dive into some of the deeper stuff here. We're going to talk about school security. And I think it's always important for us to, for our listeners, establish that common ground. So when we talk about school security, I think lots of different images kind of pop in people's heads. The latest reel on the news, whatever pops into people's heads, it's usually something pretty specific. And so we're not always on the same page. So what are some of the things we can establish common ground with here? Like, what are the myths? What are the misperceptions? And what really are we talking about when we're talking about school security?
Well, my forte is on the physical security side, but I also know that the value of systems and products is determined by the people who operate them. So I, a lot of times, like to swing over to culture, because if I don't have a personal investment, then I wind up like, and I regret that I will quote this, but remember the first after action report from Robb Elementary said that the district had the right practices in place, but that the culture had a regrettable culture of noncompliance. And that wrecks us all inside. And so I'm constantly looking for, how do I get people on board? And how do I get people to say, I now understand what you're talking about, and I want to be part of that. And actually, Michelle, this week we're doing assessments in a school district in the suburbs of Chicago. And I had been able to be part of an in-service for them last week. Now this week I'm out at schools and I'm meeting with the principals, and I had challenged them last week, all staff and administrators. I asked them, do you know how many cameras are in your building? Do you know where they are? Do you know how many exterior doors you actually have readers where you can use electronic access to get in? And I had a battery of questions. It wasn't that long. But as I've been visiting the schools this week, the principals have been saying, I did my homework. I found it out. And teachers are asking me, and that is the kind of impact that we want, because otherwise it's just window dressing. Mm-hmm. It's scenery.
It is. Yeah. I'll go on a Paul Tim scavenger hunt any day. I'm all for a scavenger hunt. And, you know, staff and students really enjoy that kind of stuff. You know, it kind of breaks us out of our rut, if you will, some of the monotony, and helps us to be more aware of our surroundings, you know, and the tools that we have at our disposal.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you bring up students, because obviously we're not going to have the same capacity in the younger ages, especially within elementary. But by the time we get to middle school, and maybe sometimes elementary, but certainly high school, the students know what's afoot. They have a pretty good idea. Maybe some aren't that interested, but the majority of students, they already know. And sometimes schools still say to me, well, we don't want students to know. And I say, too late, the ship has sailed. They already know. We need to bring them in and ask for their help in the assessment.
100%. And I'm going to push you on the little guys, because that's my territory. They will surprise you. I love a little activity where the kids all get a pad of Post-its and they get to go around and tag everything that is safety for them. So they can tag extra adults that they trust. They can tag fire extinguishers, doors, windows, the PA system, the first aid kit, the AED, on and on and on and on. We can have those same conversations with them. And it's really something that is very reassuring to the little ones. It's like, wow, you know, look at all these things. Look at all these people that are here to keep me safe.
Great idea. Thank you for sharing that.
So you talked about the hardware stuff. You talked about the people and the sort of compliance and the not here and the denial. That's the theme that we hear a lot in security, whether it's schools or banks, places of business, houses of worship. How can we help people sort of shatter that without shattering their sense of safety?
Well, I like to do unannounced visits, but I like to do it in a white hatting style, not a black hatting style. I don't like the person who puts on a hoodie and looks like they're going to cause trouble trying to sneak around the building. That does put everybody at unease. But I do like to say, let's say I'm the principal. Hey, I've got my cousin in town or whoever, and they're going to be coming by. And I already told them, please get the first name of everybody who asks you if they can help you, how they can help you. Get names of people who were not opening the door that you knocked on the side, or at least let us know the experiences that you're encountering. And then maybe we're giving people Starbucks gift cards, or we're giving them something as a positive incentive. You know, for too long, this industry has operated on the notion that negative incentives work. And I call that the wag and whine technique. I wag my finger and I say, you should be wearing your badge, or don't prop the door open. And I'm not going to whine because this is a podcast. So instead, let's go with something more positive and let's reward people for making their personal investments.
And that's just, you know, you talked about culture, which I got to give you props for that. Talking about how everything we do relates back to culture and the importance of making sure that we've got that buy-in, that it is something that's woven into the fabric of who we are and how we do business, how we take care of each other. One of the things that can be so challenging, you know, with this whole conversation is, where do we start? How do we even dig into it? How do we even know what our priorities are?
I think whatever we can do to have the arrow pointed in the right direction is a fine place to start with me. But if I could make it perfect or at least ideal, I would say, let's have an assessment. And I don't mean we have to bring me in to do that assessment. I think we can ask local responders, hey, would you be willing to be part of an assessment program and help us complete some checklists as we walk around? Or, hey, what about the Partner Alliance for Safer Schools? They have very comprehensive guidelines and checklists. We can do a self-assessment. I think that's always a good place. We get surprised that safety covers more ground than we think it does, or we get surprised that safety counts in areas that aren't necessarily weapons detection systems. And so there's no hammer that has to be dropped if we're talking about making sure that our shrubs and trees are trimmed so we have good natural surveillance. And I think, again, once we start heading in the right direction, we start saying, okay, I believe I can do this.
Yeah, we gain momentum. And that positivity that you were talking about with sort of the incentives and now talking about kind of gaining that positive momentum, that's a part of how we are in schools. You know, that's just how we are successful with moving people forward. We are not successful with the whole punitive gotcha. It's just not a successful strategy. I'm not sure. Maybe it is somewhere in the world, but in our society, and particularly in schools, it is just not successful.
You know, somebody asked, I had a guest come with to help with an assessment yesterday, and he asked the principal, and she was in her first school, first year of the first school she was principal, which is so exciting. And this person I had with me is a little bit younger than me, and he remembered having to go to the principal's office when he was a kid, and he asked her, he said, so if kids get in trouble, will they have to come to your office? And she immediately said the words I knew were coming. She said, no, we've got more restorative practices in place. And I thought, perfect. It might sometimes feel like it's a current of violence prevention societally that, you know, become buzzwords, but I agree with it. I think it's really great. And I want to share one more story. I was in a school and maybe a fourth grader was having a meltdown. Could have been a third grader. I'm getting worse and worse at judging this.
Could have been an adult.
Anyway, they were having a meltdown. I'm glad I never do. But the teacher came up and said, well, we're either going to go into timeout or we're going to call your parents. Which one do you want to do? And just at that moment, the principal was walking by and she said, well, there might be a third option. If the third option is you could come and hang out with me for a while. And she extended her hand, and this boy, through tears, and he had a little bit of rage, looked up and saw her hand. And he, in his mind, said, I believe I'll take option three. And he reached his hand up, took hers, and they walked together down the hallway. And it was almost a Hallmark moment, Michelle. And that's what I really love about what I'm seeing in schools.
I know exactly the moment that you're talking about. It's just like somebody just kind of wrote in and said, but wait, you know, like two terrible options.
Yeah.
Or this one that's actually going to help us move forward. And I'm sure there was a conversation about how are we going to make it right? And yeah. How much more practical and really successful, because that gets us where we need to be. The kids losing less instructional time, all of that. So I love to hear stories like that. And I also love to hear, one of the most exciting things I think about our community at Safe and Sound is that we have experts from all these kind of niche areas of school safety, and they start cross-talking. You know, they start like, you're talking about restorative practices, you're talking about culture, and you're like the security guy, you know, which is really awesome. That's like, there's music playing for me right now in the background.
Let me continue that for just a moment to say, in the last week, I've had conversations with three other Safe and Sound people, Jen Kim, Melissa Reeves, and Molly Hudgens, who talk about different backgrounds, FBI and school counselor and school psychology. And what I really love is the comprehensive approach that Safe and Sound takes. It makes it rewarding for me to be part of what your organization is doing because we're doing it collaboratively.
It is the best team sport, I'm telling you. We get good stuff done together. So I'm just thrilled to hear those stories. That is great. So one thing that comes up over and over and over again, wherever we go, Paul, whoever we're talking to, the sort of knee-jerk reaction that we all have in regard to security is to look to build a fortress. Let's make it as safe as we possibly can. And so one of the conversations that naturally takes place is about doors and how can we quickly and safely and better lock and secure them. And there are a lot of really simple answers there, and there are some not so simple things there. So lots to dig into here in terms of, you know, myths to debunk, misperceptions to kind of untangle and help us to get to the simple truths that help keep our teachers and our students safe in school.
Yes. Well, let me err on the side of brevity by saying this. Access control as a topic is one of those arenas that's protecting people all the time. We can't say that as much about video surveillance cameras or burglar alarm systems. And I don't want to diminish those things at all, but access control is protecting people all the time. And in every school violence incident on record, there has been some kind of failure of access control. And that might be because we propped open a door or we put a magnet over the latch plate of the door. And I don't want to get into all the nitty-gritty, but we do know both from the Sandy Hook after action report and the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas after action report that the bad guy has never breached a locked classroom door. And so we want to have the capability of knowing that we can quickly get that done. There are going to be some schools that keep them closed and locked at all times. Good for them. There's going to be some schools who say, I can't do that operationally, but I can make sure that it's very easy to lock it very quickly. Some are even going to go to centralized electronic solutions on that. And good people will continue to have differing opinions, and different schools will continue to think operationally they can do this or they can't do that. But the bottom line is, I can be safe in my classroom in most cases if I can close that door and lock it very quickly if the threat is outside of the room. Mm-hmm. And then I'm buying myself some time. And that's all of what doors and door hardware are doing. They're operating in the delay category so that we can marshal our heroes to come and intercept whoever is threatening us. And that's really what we want to do. And schools were designed to have doors in classrooms. And thankfully, most schools have locks on doors. If they don't, we want to make sure that they do. Mm-hmm. If they do have locks, we prefer if it locks from the inside. And we can just go right down this. What we don't want to do is go, oh my gosh, and there are these really cool barricade devices that we can add on to that. And the reason I say that is because we always have security, but we always have safety in schools. And fire safety says one motion to egress that room, not two motions because I've got another thingamajiggy in place. ADA says no tight pinching and grasping. That's why we have levers
let's unpack a little bit of that terminology more. The one motion means what? And the tight pinching and grasping means what? What are we referring to?
Okay, thank you for asking, and I appreciate that. One motion says, I hit the lever, the latch goes back, and the door opens. It's the same concept if I'm in a gymnasium and I need to get out that exterior door, I just fall into what you call the panic device, which is really an exit device.
Yeah.
The panic bar, it's going to let me out. Even if I can't see it because there's smoke in the room, I can fall into it and it's going to let me out. We have a lever because we used to have knobs.
Yes.
But a knob required tight pinching and grasping.
Yeah.
And there are some people who just simply can't do that, but they can hit a lever in some kind of way, and it's going to release and let them out of there. So those are the key terms that we have to know, and that's why ADA regulations are in place and National Fire Protection Association or NFPA codes are in place because they save lives.
They do, and they have proven to save lives over and over and over again.
66 years of saving lives.
It works. And that kind of discipline, just making sure those are our codes, that's what we live by, making sure that this place is prepared to keep everybody safe.
And we would never want to introduce a device that could keep the good guys out.
Yeah.
So I'm a bad guy. I'm in a room. I see a device right on the frame. I drop it in some kind of place, and now the good guys can't get in the room. It started as a good intention that becomes in reality a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. The intentions are good. Like, you know, we could have a locking door, but we could also have this thing and we could also attach this, and more is not always better, right? And as you said, we can be introducing a whole new set of problematic scenarios. Sadly, assaults in rooms like that, creating an opportunity for bullying, physical assault, sexual assault. And those are things that unfortunately are happening in our schools and communities at numbers at a rate that I think would just drop everybody's jaw to the floor.
Yes, a far greater threat in terms of regularity than an active shooter would be.
Yeah, so lots to think about there. Thank you for helping us unpack that a little bit. So one of the other things I think that's kind of in that misconceptions, challenges bucket when we talk about school security is we hear people talk about how it's expensive and they don't have the funds for it. And although that argument's a little bit difficult to make these days with the grant monies that are floating around, but yeah, it's expensive and we don't have time. And lately now I hear like, I don't even know, I'm not an IT person. I don't even know how to do that. What would you say to some of those issues?
Well, I think that education is always the remedy, which means let's learn a little bit about what we're talking about, and then let's share that information with others. If we do have an expensive system, sometimes you're going to find a benefactor or somebody who will say, I'm on board. I can see how this is going to make sense. Conversely, if you say, there's a very expensive system and we should implement it, and you're not telling anybody about why, and maybe you're not even sure that it's the best, you just think it's going to satisfy the board, it is difficult, and I think it should be. But once we find something that is legitimate, and maybe it does involve technology, there's plenty of people who want to get involved and plenty of stakeholders who have a personal interest in making sure that it's safe. And I'm going to give just one example so we get out of the nebulous. And that is a lot of schools now are moving toward being able to just pick up any telephone in the building, dial a sequence on the phone, and access the public address system. And that is wonderful. It's wonderful mass notification. And sometimes schools say, our phone system is antiquated, or that's probably an expensive software upgrade. And you hear the knee jerk because we have people who are doubting. And then I say, okay, well, let's take a look at it. Let's bring in somebody maybe from the technology group or somebody from the Association of School Business Officials who's already done this in their building. Let's find a pathway to make this happen. But all of that begins with education.
100%. Let's take a look at it. Let's see, what does it really entail? What does it really cost? Is it really that big and scary? You know, because oftentimes it's not. And we do, I think, have in our schools and communities, as you said, a lot more in terms of human resources than we are often recognizing and taking advantage of. So that's a great point there. too, which kind of leads me to where we'll wrap our conversation off with the sound off. So this is your opportunity to help us think as listeners, as a community, about things that we can do better, things that we can do different. Is there anything that we can do to shift our mindset or our daily practice that can enhance the safety and security of our school community?
Absolutely, we can. And if I had to choose just one place that I would begin, it would be in greater appropriate involvement of students. We know for a fact that they're ahead of us in technology, unless somebody is going to want to argue with me and we'll get a third grader on and face off against them right now.
Ooh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Do that next time.
They're ahead of us in technology. They've got a much better pulse of what's really going on. And we cannot deny that social media over and over again is playing a role. And you and I know that while we have not said social media is ridiculous, I'm never going to be involved in it, you and I have not done that. We're also not using it unwisely. We know that there's not just risks in social media, but there's plenty of solutions. And so one of the things I like to do, Michelle, is ask a school, and this is predominantly high school, but I might be able to go middle school, to say, hey, how about during a departmental meeting or an all-staff meeting, asking a student to get 3 or 4 minutes to tell us a little bit more about Snapchat and the associated features like Snap Maps or TikTok and what some of the challenges are and how we can find something positive out of challenges that are happening. I just think then giving that student the platform where they're gaining experience. And that's, by the way, I think what the mission of the school is, to give them those kinds of experiences. And then we begin to learn. And I want to say my son, who's now more than 30, told me probably 15 years ago, he said, Dad, we're the first generation in the history of mankind that is consistently bringing vital information to the generations above us. And dag nabbit, he was right. And so I know I have to be a learner. I cannot just be the teacher. I cannot just be the person who's in charge, because what I find out then is I'm not really. I love to, actually, I shouldn't say I love to humble myself, but I should like the benefits of humbling myself and getting in the trenches with somebody who might be able to teach me a thing or two that then if I have my wisdom brought to the table, we've got a good recipe for everyone.
I think that's a great point. I think, you know, students, you know, engaging our students is just another one of those amazing human resources, right? The knowledge that they're bringing, but also not discounting the wisdom of some of us that have been, you know, been at this, been focused on this, you know, have a frontal lobe, you know, have some experience out in the world. That's a pretty solid combination. For sure.
I agree. And I never want to feel diminished if I'm admitting that somebody has more knowledge or at least is faster at accessing it than me. I want to be confident to say, I've been around the block. I've got some good experience and I think I can help direct this. I've learned a few things. And all of a sudden, if I've humbled myself, I've also maintained self-confidence and I'm modeling something that they should be learning anyway.
Well, that is a great place to just put a bow on it right there. That's everything. So thank you so much, Paul, for joining us. It has been a great conversation. Many more ahead of us. The Sound Off today with Paul Tim. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
We hope you enjoyed this powerful episode of The Sound Off with Paul Tim. Thank you to our season sponsor, the Door Security and Safety Foundation, for supporting this podcast, and thank you for listening and supporting our mission. Remember, school safety is a collective responsibility, and together, we can make a difference. Subscribe now to The Sound Off to stay informed and be part of the movement for safe and sound schools. Until next time, stay safe, everybody. Stay safe and sound.